The prodigal son is, when understood, an insightful parable about the nature of the Christian and Jewish God, whom I respectfully call love's fool. It is the quality and actions of costly love portrayed by the father character in this parable which informs us about the nature of Jesus' God. God is not an old man with two sons. God is the love that the fictitious old man exhibits. It's a love that can withstand insult and humiliation. It's a love that includes offenders. It's a love deemed foolish. It's a love that values relationships between people above society's and religion's conventions. The parable progressively takes the emphasis off beliefs and puts it on behavior. Beliefs around family, inheritance, conformity, and penalties are deemed secondary to the restoration of relationships in the family. Rather than obey the rules and expectations of first century Palestinian society, this costly love bursts the boundaries to include the disgraced one and the disgruntled one back into relationship. Relationships are more important than rules. The latter are there to serve the former, not vice versa. In this parable, there are six shameful, some might say sinful, acts. And the first two happen immediately. The younger asks for his share of the property, and the father gives it. The primary act of wrongdoing by the younger son was not misusing the inheritance, but asking for it. When he asks for a share of the property, it is tantamount to wishing his father dead, for property usually passed on to the next generation only after death. The second shameful act in the story is the father's. In granting his younger son's request, the father shows himself to be a fool. He chances losing his honor, his support, and his control. In ceding a third of the estate, that's what the younger was entitled to, the father also puts in jeopardy the financial well-being of the whole unit. As events unfold, with the younger son frittering away his finances, the father's wanton generosity would be seen as bringing shame rather than honor to the family. The restless son came to the loving father and insulted him by demanding the resources to be free. The son did not want to be caged by family responsibility and duty. The loving father, like many parents over the centuries, thought of the consequences of denying the request. Then the father, knowing his other dependents and neighbors would think him foolhardy and irresponsible, yet also knowing that satisfying relationships can never flourish where there is coercion, took a deep breath and said yes. Love bore the cost. The third shameful act was the younger son's squandering of the inheritance. It's portrayed in the story as self-destructive. He works for a profane foreigner, feeding profane pigs. And these are signals to the Jewish audience that he not only has sunk as low as one can go, but he's also lost his faith. His squandering also loses him his family, for in future he would have no means to fulfill his duties and provide support for his kin. Love's gift of freedom can easily be lost. The prodigal comes to himself and decides to return to the ancestral home in order to work as a hired hand. The parable does not portray this as a cynical calculation to escape poverty, although the audience may have wondered. Rather, he is portrayed as desperate. He has no expectation that he will be restored to the privilege of sonship. Indeed, he can no longer be a son, for he's forfeited those rights. The fourth shameful act was the manner of the father's forgiveness. Love goes overboard. The father's behavior is out of character. He seems to be out looking for this reprobate. He runs, not the seeming thing for a patriarch to do, kisses and hugs him. He confers forgiveness when there's no evidence of the son's sincerity, or even at that stage a request for forgiveness. This display of emotion indicates that the father is not bound by the legal and paternal roles expected of him, but rather by his deep and nurturing love for his children. The father's disregard of legalities is evident when he asks his slaves to carry out orders that have the appearance of restoring the son to his former status and inducting him into the duties of a hired hand. Love not only wants to forgive and include, regardless of what others think, it also wants to restore. The father has received the son back, and as was normal, is still in control of the property. The welcome means that the younger can be supported from the property as long as the father lives. In a limited goods society, however, the youngest has not only wasted a third of the communal resources, but by being received back will ultimately be a financial burden to the detriment of his older brother. The fifth shameful act is that of the elder brother. He feels the reception of his wayward sibling is unjust, and we often feel he's right. He does not want to join in the feast given on the return of the prodigal. He's angry. Love's gone too far and forgotten its responsibilities. It's the elder brother's refusal to dine with his father that is culturally a very shameful act. Just as the younger shamed the patriarch in asking for his inheritance, so the elder shames his father by not eating with him. He too violates the fourth commandment. The elder sees the father as having brought dishonor on the family by ceding to the son's request and welcoming him back. He sees his younger sibling as having brought dishonor in both his request for his inheritance and his squandering of it. The prodigal has further shamed the family, according to the elders, by consorting with prostitutes, therefore compromising the family's bloodline. The story is quite clever at this point. It shows how, with the reference to these non-existent prostitutes, the stay-at-home fantasizes about leaving home and projects both his envy and his fear upon his brother. The sixth shameful act is the father's response to this jealous sibling. As with his dealings with the younger, the father refuses to assert the authority and discipline of patriarchal entitlement. He comes out to his elder son and affirms him not as a slave, but as a companion and co-owner. However, he goes much further than this. He addresses him with the affectionate term technon, or child. The father is again stepping away from dealing with his family crisis through technical legal means. Addressing the elder as child serves the same function as the kissing and forgiving of the younger son. It's relationality, not legality, that is paramount. It's the finding and loving of his children that concerns him, not his honor, as represented by the inheritance. Love seeks not to defend its own honor and importance, but to reach out, to heal, and to embrace. The father rejects neither of his sons. Upon his death, the estate will go to the eldest, who will assume the duties of the patriarch. Yet the father is interested in the end not in the morality or inheritance, but in the ongoing relationship between these two boys. The purpose of doing the dishonorable thing and allowing the younger his inheritance, doing the dishonorable thing and unconditionally forgiving the son, doing the dishonorable thing and coming out to the elder brother who ashamed him. The purpose of doing all this is for relationship, and ultimately not for relationship with him, but relationship between the two sons. Likewise, the costly love called God is not only for the purpose of bringing individuals into a relationship with the divine, but ultimately for the purpose of bringing individuals into relationship with each other. Costly love gives when it does not have to, is generous when it seems foolhardy, and suffers when the beloved is estranged. Costly love forgives even when it isn't asked to, restores even when it's viewed as unwise to, and suffers when others don't understand. It serves the mending and nourishment of relationships and will overstep the boundaries in order to do so. It's a mistake to view this parable through the lens of repentant sinner. We don't even know how repentant the prodigal actually was. It's far better and a far wider lens to view it as love's fool, namely love's fearless commitment to building and restoring relationships, cost what it may, come whatever will.